Okay, Keith.
But tonight I'm delighted to welcome Janet Kaliri here. She's a human potential practitioner whose mission is igniting human potential. She's a former medical professional in cardiovascular radiology, professional photographer, a certified life coach, published author. And tonight she's going to be talking about this book, Me With Me. I am as good to others to the degree I am with me. Thank you very much for coming to Many Rivers.
Thank you very much, Jim and John and Robert. Thank you. I just got to grab one thing in my bag, my book. I just got all my notes. Well, thank you for coming. And yeah, I'm Janet Kaliri, and some of you know me, some of you don't. So I would love to just give you a quick background on how this book came to be and why I am talking about it 6 years later after it was published. Mm. It was published in December 2008, and the book came about not because I planned to write a book, but 10 years ago I had another a transition in life based on me not honoring red flags. So we're going to talk about self-care being your best health care tonight, and honoring red flags is a really good way to keep yourself healthy. So I was in a situation where I was engaged to a man in Vancouver, BC, and all the red flags were popping up, and I was ignoring all of them and just gung-ho, and I'm going to do this no matter what. And even life woke me up at like 5 a.m. the week before I was going to move up to Vancouver, and projectile vomiting for no apparent reason, and just all these big, big aha messages that I just chose to ignore. So I moved up there, he called it off 3 days later, and thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars later. I went back to Boston, where I'm from, and I stay with my family for the summer. And in the meantime, back in 2001, I had been assisting a leadership and personal development company in San Francisco. And it was through working with them, Judy and Randy Revelle, the founders, who are no longer with us, for 2 years, I helped them through their one-week experiential courses. And I had so much insight about myself, and it's why I actually became a coach. So when I was in this turmoil of the breakup, my mentor, one of the leaders of the course, suggested that I take the course again. And so I flew to Seattle for a week, and Phil Holcomb is his name, one of the mentors and the writers of the course. And during the course, he said, get Janet with Janet. Just get Janet with Janet, and everything else will fall into place. And that's how the book came about, Me With Me. So you just put your name in there, Chance with Chance, Anka with Anka, Maxine with Maxine, going on and on. So that's the title. I'm actually not really happy with the title, but it really says what the book is about. So the idea is that I can only give to you in my relationships, come on, Dad, to the degree that I'm giving to myself. So it's like driving a car. The car's not going to run if the tank isn't full with gas or electricity these days. And when you're on an airplane, the flight attendant says, put your oxygen mask on first before assisting others. Because how could you possibly breathe, help another person if you're not breathing any oxygen? So, mostly for women, we've been conditioned to put ourselves last, and there's a little weakness that we have there in our conditioning, and we often see that that doesn't work. So, hence the book, and it is comprised of real-life stories. I interviewed people along the way about different topics, forgiveness, self-compassion, honoring red flags, communication effectiveness, being bigger than your reasons, all sorts of things. And then I wrote some exercises that you can do on your own, and there's some teachings in here. Now, I'm talking about the book this many years later because of what resulted in after I published it. There's so much more content I have to share, and I just haven't had time to write the next book. So I'm just doing it live. And so this is published December 5th, 2008, and very soon thereafter, in January, my life force just stopped. And I had my own business, so I was constantly on the move. Clients come in and go, they come and go, and constantly getting out there. And I just was like, I just have no energy to do any of this, and I love my work. And I was like, what the heck is going on with me? Then I had these out-of-body experiences, and I was like, why do I keep going out of my body? And before I knew it, I was losing material things, and I was losing my brain function. So I decided to do 90 days of video on little topics in the book. So for 90 days, I thought, I'm going insane, and I've got to do something creative to help myself sustain my life right now. So each day I shot a short video of some topic in the book, and 90 days straight. And then what I did is I took all the 90 days and I made a book trailer, which you can find on YouTube or my website. In the meantime, I was just kept losing more energy. Then I was gaining weight, for no reason at all. And before you know it, I just lost my business, my car, my home. It's just all gone. Sleeping on my friend's couch, this couch, that couch. And brain function gone, then my immune system gone, my metabolism just gone. So I didn't know what was wrong, and I just got to a point in June of 2010, and I forgot to bring you the before and after picture, but you can see it on my website, that I just really surrendered and called my cousin in Boston, where I'm from, and she said I could stay with her. But my family, being Italian-Irish Catholics, decided they wanted to intervene on that. So suffice it to say, I went back to Boston, and I spent a year and a half slaying dragons. Because one, I didn't know what was wrong with me. I had no bandwidth. I had nothing to give to anybody. And then I have my family telling me to get an effing job. And so that was not the support that I wanted or needed. And so then I thought, oh, okay, now I've really got to stand in my truth. And I'm laughing at life because it's just given me this big opportunity to be Janet with Janet in every sense of the meaning, be in your truth, be in my truth. And so, by the way, my book is in first person, so if you hear me speak in first person, it's so that you can hear it in first person and absorb it. And I got to stand in my truth. And every day I did that, and my family didn't like that, and it was just but it really cut through so much crap that had been building up through all the years. My family is wonderful. We get along. I'm not making them bad people. They're just my family. And I'm sure that you all have relations with family. So that was a year and a half in Boston. And when I had enough life force, and that was a result of working with a nutritionist, metabolic typing advisor and nutritionist. And I began to experiment with food, and Maxine knows what I'm talking about. She's a holistic nutritionist. Okay. And I started working with food, eliminating and bringing in different foods, and my energy started to come back. My immune system started to come back. My brain function began to cooperate. And I actually went back to school. I'd never gone to a degree college. I have a background in radiology and all kinds of schooling. So I started going to school online, like Carolyn's doing right now. And so I got some brain function back with that too. And enough where I could get back here to Northern California. So, and then I did odd projects for people, and I helped I came and I stayed with people and helped them get their life back together. So that's how I housed myself and how I just got to get back in the practice of my work and in exchange for helping them get their life back. And I just kept learning and learning so much about the body. And so the illness was adrenal exhaustion. Does anybody know what adrenal glands are? Okay. So they're responsible for the homeostasis of the body. They give off adrenaline, adrenal, and also cortisol, which is a stress hormone, but it also is a buffer for inflammation. And when we have inflammation in the body, lots of trouble. So that's why my brain function loss and the immune system and the metabolism. And I was just enamored by the body. And even though I had studied the body and I worked in medicine, I was just enamored by how one little gland is off and kaput, like your whole life just goes down the tube. I saw myself as clean slated. I'm like, woohoo, I get to recreate my whole life. How am I going to do this? And so when I was sick, I took a camera and I began to take pictures of little evidence of progress. Tiny, tiny steps of progress. How am I making progress in any area? Financially, tons of pictures of food. I was so sick of being in the kitchen. Happy, smiley faces of eggs, all sorts of things. Going back to school, I ended up being an honor student, which I never was, you know, back in the day. So taking pictures of all the A's, the grades. And so I just began taking little pictures, and that started give me more hope and more self-compassion. You know? So self-compassion is a big self-care tool. If we're beating ourselves up, we're putting ourselves back in the ground. And the other piece that I did was take pictures of things that I resisted and practice looking at these images of what I resisted and practice just not describing, just looking at what was in the picture. You know, there was a pile of dishes and pots and pans for 4 days because I was so sick. And I came out to the kitchen and saw the mess I made, and I began to criticize myself and beat myself up, and you should, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I thought, oh my God, I'm making myself sicker. And so I took a picture of this, and I just practiced what was in the picture. Pot pan, water spigot, peeler, cutting board, scrub brush. And I just repeated it over and over and over again. No description. Because guess what happens when we start to describe and put adjectives and meaning to things? What happens?
They get bigger.
They get bigger and we get more miserable because our stories, we begin to believe our stories that we make up from the description. Like, I'm a loser. I should never have dirty dishes in the sink for 4 days. La 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 la. Okay. So so it was 5 years of super self-care. It was like, how can I get good with myself? Spiritually, physically, mentally, emotionally. And so that photographic process, which I now teach, and that includes self-care and the two other pieces, the progress and the resistance, that's what I do right now. I teach people how to go through any type of transition that they're feeling challenged in, because transitions are fundamental. They're always going to happen. They're not going to go away. So getting good with yourself is a really great way to support yourself through transitions, death, illness, puberty, menopause, you recovery, moving, career change, you name it, you know. So how many of you are in a transition right now? Oh, okay, lots of you, all right. And how many of you have children? Lots of children? Okay, so how many of you have been feeling challenged on and off or consistently? Okay. This is reality. So let's create more ease and joy. Let's create more ease and joy. And oftentimes we don't honor ourselves. Oftentimes we don't get good with ourselves. We're afraid of somebody getting mad at us if we put ourselves first. Yes, am I the only one? Okay. we're afraid of losing a relationship if we put ourselves first. Been there. Uh-huh. So we're afraid of what others think about us if we put ourselves first. So we just keep letting those things be priority, and guess what happens to us? Resentment, resistance. It's actually the three R's. It's resistance, resentment, revenge. And oftentimes we're getting revenge. We don't even know we're getting revenge on somebody. It's really quiet, really subtle. It can be very loud too. But what I want to ask right now is, what does self-care mean to you? So I would love for this to be a discussion, and that's sort of how I roll, and it's much more exciting than you sitting there listening to me. So I do have that question, is what does self-care look like or feel like to you? If anybody would like to share that.
Naps?
Mm-hmm.
My best piece of self-care is getting up early enough in the morning to go out to the hot tub and do my daily energy practice.
Yeah,
and just be there with the birds and flowers and do my energy work.
Mm-hmm.
That's my self-care.
And how difficult is that to do when you were raising children?
Mm-hmm.
Did it feel like it was almost impossible, or it was at some point you thought it was impossible?
Especially when they're sick.
What else?
Dumping in nature, walking in nature, letting it all go in nature.
Were you going to say something? I thought I saw your hand.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I have to get out and be with interesting people.
Okay.
So I might take a class.
Get the creative juices going.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'll read you a quick passage. This is actually about my sister. So like I said, the book has a lot of stories in it. So my sister's 3 years older than I. She's got three kids. She got married at like 23. She did the whole thing. Get married young, have the house and the kids, and her husband worked. So a very special woman in my life, my sister Christine, is a blessed wife, mother of three, student, personal trainer, and marathon runner. One routine that is very important to her is exercise. When she realized that the reality of having three kids lent itself to less time for her, she decided to wake up each morning before her husband and children, like 5 a.m., which allows valuable time for Christine to center her thoughts into exercise. With this, her productivity and focus increases. She frequently has a balanced life emotionally, physically, spiritually, and mentally. This creates a strong model for balance of body, mind, and spirit for her children, husband, friends, and colleagues. On days that she is feeling off balance, Christine uses prayer as a tool to refocus and keep motivated. What a gift. So she started this like right when she, you know, as soon as she could with her first child, she began her routine, and it's been her grounding force since. And not to say it's like always been easy for her, but she has just really stuck to this honoring herself, Christine. So, but again, we can often have reasons for not doing that. And you know, like my example is the red flags. I got reasons to ignore those red flags. The first time that I really gave to myself first, like really honored myself first, was when I moved to California up here in 2001. I grew up on the East Coast, Irish, Italian, Catholic. We're like supposed to all be together, and you know, I have a big family. We have lots of fun, and we do lots of things together, and it just wasn't right for me. Like being out there, it just wasn't right. And for a year, I just had these shamanic dreams and natural disaster dreams, and they were all leading me here. And they were all a sign, like, if you don't make a big move to honor yourself right now, you're going to get sick. Cause I had bouts of depression and anxiety and all kinds of stuff. So it was really, that was difficult. How hard is it to give to yourself first, to really honor yourself, right? My family didn't like that I moved away. I had to do it. I absolutely had to do it. So that's a big step in Janet with Janet, or honoring yourself first, is, you know. So there's, you know, there are types of self-care. There's emotional, physical, mental, and spiritual. So physical, we yes.
Well, these things can distract us. They can change your body chemistry. How do you get to the root of the problem?
Which things?
How do you find the root of the problem? How do you find what's causing depression?
Oh, well, for me, depression was caused by not expressing myself. In my book, I have a quote, and it says, "Stifled expression leads to depression." And that was my experience. I'm not going to say that that is the truth for everybody, but I can say that that was my truth, and I often see that in people. People with depression, they're not fully expressing who they are. They're not in their mojo, which is a section in my book about really stepping into your purpose and contributing in that way. And we're often afraid to do that. And that's not self-care. You know, we maybe even more so men, I've got to feed my family, I'm going to work in this job, and this is what I'm going to do, whether I like it or not. It's honorable to a degree, but then when, you know, somebody becomes really miserable and sick because they're doing something that they hate, it's not serving the family, it's not serving. So to get at the root of depression, I will also offer to you that, and I can speak from my personal experience and clients that I work with, and you might have something to say, but sugar causes me, and Chance knows this too, sugar causes massive depression for me. Gluten, white stuff, white rice, white potato, white rice and white bread, yeah, kills my brain. It's just like out of sorts. I don't know if you have something to say about depression, because Chance is a brain expert, and you're a nutritionist, so you're welcome to chime in if you have anything to say about how do you get to the source of depression.
Yeah. I would comment to that. Because what was coming to mind when you were asking about what is self-care to me, it's not a particular activity. It's more getting to the root of what are my needs. Like, just even sometimes we don't even know what we need. Mm-hmm. And trying to find, well, what are these emotions signaling? You know, and getting underneath some of the layering of conditioning that says to be a good person, I should be this and such, I should do this and such. It actually kind of creates a barrier to really recognizing, well, maybe I actually have a need for going to California.
I don't have depression anymore.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like sometimes there's something that inside of us is trying to get our attention. And it's really, all kinds of things can be helpful in finding our way through, but I think sometimes that's the biggest issue. And mm-hmm. I totally agree with you that, with Janet, that white flour processed foods create a barrier to our brain's capacity to engage, like, the mind, the heart, the body. It impedes the messaging system.
The vagus nerve, for example, it's a vessel between the gut and the brain. So these are some things to look at, you know, in terms of depression, or how do I get to the bottom. It's like with my adrenal exhaustion, how did I get to the bottom of that? Well, I did experimentation with food. I eliminated food, I brought foods in, I rotated foods, I cooked them differently. Today, I soak all of my grains and legumes, for example. So, when I had depression and anxiety and sleep, all that crap, and I was taking pills and stuff, I don't take pills anymore, meds. And it's in my book, and there was a time where the doctor gave me sleeping pills. And I was working at the hospital at that point, and we had a pharmacy there, and I went and picked up the pills, and I'm at the counter, and I pick up the pills, and I turn around, and excuse my language, but I got to tell you, I turned around, and as I'm walking out the door, there's this big trash can, and I just said, F you, and I threw the pills, and I never took a medication again except for an antibiotic, but it was like in that moment, I knew that this isn't life. There's something more. There's something deeper. And so, you know, it's maybe the food that we eat is causing depression. Maybe it's that, yeah, we're not expressing our soul. We're not fully expressing who we are. That's a cause.
Mm-hmm. So once you get your body in shape and you're eating healthy and that sort of thing, there's this other thing about identity, you know, the work that you do in the world. And the world's kind of crazy right now. There's not a lot of jobs for people, so there's some people are things they've enjoyed doing are not necessarily going to be what they can do.
Mm-hmm.
In the future.
Yeah.
So they got to shift gears. Mm-hmm. I remember reading a book years ago called Shifting Gears. And so I always remind myself of that, you know, I'm going through a shift here before I can figure out what the next move is going to be. And that takes a lot of faith.
It takes a lot of faith. It took me 5 years, you know, to figure out what I was going to do next. And I always had to supplement. I'm still supplementing what I do because I'm just coming out of 5 years of transition.
It also takes some, I mean, you can do it yourself, but it helps to have good people in your life.
You got to have the community. I got a lot of people here supporting me
just
tonight.
It's hard to find those people.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, there are ways to do that, and that's a part of self-care. I'd love to talk to you about that. Hi, Deb.
Hey. Well, I'm an acupressure, Jin Shinjutsu practitioner, and what I find with my clients and just in life, it's all about repatterning. And if the body's stuck and caught up in a way of being, it doesn't necessarily know how to let go of that until you can energetically remind it how to be in a state of flow.
Yes.
And once that body is experiencing that, it's like it gets this aha moment. And in that aha moment is the breath, and is the flow, and is that space of time where everything can change. Because the body wants to be in flow, it wants to be in movement, it hates being stuck. You show it how to not be stuck, and it says, okay, I'm alive now.
Yeah. And it's uncomfortable at first.
It can be.
That's the thing is, like we need to be willing to be uncomfortable for a short amount of time or a long amount of time in order to get through it and make the change. So a lot of people aren't willing to be uncomfortable, and then there's really no growth or change. But it's necessary. And of course, the discomfort is related to what I perceive it to be. You know, does that answer your question to a degree?
Just an observation on my part.
Yeah.
Not necessarily a question, but it certainly helps to have well-balanced people to talk to, because if you just talk to yourself all the time, you get the same answers all the time.
Yeah. And then I start thinking I'm right. Oh, yeah, that really works.
It also helps to get out and do a few things that are different than we're used to doing. You
know, yeah, changing the brain up.
Classes that I just thought were kind of brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm inviting people to join me. Mm-hmm. I'm feeling different.
Good, yeah. Well, that's it. And Sonoma County is such a great place for community. That's why I'm here. Yeah, it's really important to me. Community is, you know, that's a form of self-care. Surrounding myself with a certain vibration, certain mentality, certain spirit. That's leadership, really. It's like I'm going to surround myself with people who are going in the same direction I'm going, who are more advanced than me, that can teach me, who are a little less advanced than me, that I can teach, and we're all in it together. And so, yeah, nutrition is certainly a
good start.
Very, very good start, yeah. emotional. Self-care. I like to talk about boundaries. I love talking about boundaries. Well, I grew up with no boundaries. There were no boundaries in Italian-Irish Catholic families.
Catholic Church?
What was that?
You had jobs at home because you had a big family. You had Catholic Church rules.
Yeah, but those were, you know, those were very misaligned for me. So those were boundaries that were set up by the church, talking like inter-family, especially in the family, and that my church boundaries really didn't work for me either. So then there's that offset of like, okay, I'm this young kid and certain things aren't working for me, and how do I set my life up where I can be aligned with some of that and then be aligned with what works for me. And my mom always put herself last, and then she complained about it.
Right.
Where were you in the family lineup? Were you the youngest, the oldest?
Second oldest. My sister, me, and then two brothers.
So just four of you?
Yeah. Lots of cousins and aunts and uncles. And
do you have a lot of responsibility then?
I had some responsibility, yeah. I mean, we all pitched in and did our things. Yeah, yeah.
Kind of democratic?
Yeah, I'd say that. And I never thought about it that way, but, yeah. My mom always put herself last, and then she complained about it. I don't know if that's democratic, though. It's often very similar to. So, I dedicated the book to my mom, and I mean, she's a good example of martyrdom. You know, and trust me, I've been there, and I still, that's my little thing that I still have now and then. It'll always be there, but I don't let it control me anymore because I've done the work. And, you know, self-awareness, all that work is self-care too. I got to know myself so that I could have better relationships and be of service in a better way. And so martyrdom really, you know, it doesn't work that well. So boundaries, yeah. So my mom, like, didn't set a boundary. She just was a martyr. And then she was always unhappy and dissatisfied with so many things. And, you know.
Moms.
You know, you're a mom.
I'm a mom.
Yeah. So, and not all moms are like that, but it's just an example. You know, I saw it in my mom, and then I became very similar to that, and I noticed that didn't work for me. It was creating distance between me and the people that I loved, and I was feeling quite frustrated for most of the time. So emotional boundaries, good. Who has an example of boundaries?
So are you saying you were the helper type?
Yes, I am.
Other people?
Yeah.
Are you familiar with the Enneagram's book?
Yes. Yep. I'm a
two.
I don't remember actually. Probably.
I'm just starting to read the book. Digest it.
Okay. So who has examples of boundaries? It could be emotional.
When you can't say no, right?
Okay, when I don't say no. So that's really not a boundary. But when I begin to say when I begin to say no, that I'm developing an emotional boundary. How difficult is that to do? It's quite difficult.
Especially if you haven't had that to modeled for you.
You haven't had it modeled, and then people are used to you being that way, and then suddenly you're like, no? What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. As growing up, I was Midwestern Minnesota, Hicksville, USA country. And so it wasn't Catholic, it was Missouri City Lutheran.
Mm-hmm.
And you got that picture? And I was Miss Goody Two Shoes. I was the eldest. I always did everything I was supposed to. I was the best student. I followed the rules. And then when I decided not to, all hell broke loose. Because it was all, this isn't working for me anymore. I'm not staying here. And if I'm not staying here, I can't continue being like the rest of this.
The same experience, yeah.
Yeah.
And everyone goes into shock. And
oh, big shock.
And you're the bad person.
Oh, my dad didn't talk to me for almost a year.
This is why we often don't make boundaries. We're afraid of how people that we're close to are going to respond. And I'm not sure who said this or if it's actually an official quote, but it goes like this. What you think about me is none of my business. And it's not a snarly thing. It's an attitude.
It's a little harder in your family than it is. I can say that to the rest of the world. But in my own family, that's a little bit harder.
It is harder, but I did it.
Yeah, that's the hardest thing for me. Your children, you want to have that really close relationship. You want to be involved. You want to be included.
Mm-hmm.
And they're so busy, especially in their 20s.
Yeah, my 20s moved back and they brought an extra.
They're like really
nice. So I have a house full of 20s.
So focused on what they have to do. I mean, that's what I realized. You know, they're trying to make their own mistakes and learn from them.
Well, see, and that's good. I want them out there making their mistakes and coming home to maybe have me cook a meal every once in a while. So I don't have to be wrapped up in their
stuff.
And we're all sensitive. So even when we put up boundaries, I can feel what you're feeling.
Yeah,
so
yeah. Then there's that type of boundary too, energetic boundary.
When it's like, okay, I need some space away from all of these. Then it's like their feelings hurt. You know.
I used to take on the world's emotions. That's just, I'm a sponge, I'm an empath. I used to take on the world's emotions. Martyr. Mm-hmm. Thought I had to do it.
But when you read the newspaper these days, you know, I mean, we're trying to be aware of what's going on. I feel overwhelmed sometimes.
Absolutely.
With everything that's going
on. I don't read it anymore.
But I have to, because I've got to vote. I've got to be aware of what's happening to my city. I mean, to be a responsible adult, I have to be aware.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't shut that out. But I
select viewing, maybe.
I learned how to balance it.
Okay, good. That's self-care.
I don't change the channel.
Yeah.
But it is at times it's overwhelming. I think I feel it and absorb it.
Yeah.
So how about setting boundaries that kind of slow the flow of information that's coming in, whether it's energetic or emotional or media-wise information?
Mm-hmm.
I have an example. In my family of origin, Mom was responsive in no matter, you know, if the phone rang, jumped to the phone. If the door, not just walked to the door, run to the door. Everything was like,
she owed everybody.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so, of course, I learned the same thing. And one of the best lessons I ever had was I got into a marriage in which I was jumping, you know, and if my husband said he needed me to do something, boom, I would say yes before I even realized that I didn't really want to say yes. So I learned how to say, I'll have to get back to you on that. And it bought me time to be with myself and assess how it worked for me or come up with a negotiation or something like that.
That's a really good, very simple, very respectful solution. I'll get back to you.
Yeah. One of my most favorite words is maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. I'll have to check in with that later.
You're all allowed to do it. You have the right to do it. And it's respectful. It's not a no. It's not a yes. It's like, it's not only like, it's not only, okay, I want to make sure it's good for me, but I want to make sure that I have enough of me to give to this person who wants me to do this for them. So there's two things involved there.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, it's not just about if it's good for me. It's like, okay, well, am I going to have the bandwidth? Am I going to be present enough? What do I have the knowledge to do this for this person? So it's really two pieces there. In communication, you have a communication you want to make with someone. I have a communication model in the book. And one of the first things I ask, and some of the people in my life do the same, is this a good time to talk? Or, I got something to talk to you about. I would love to clear something up. So now you're stating your intention. That's self-care. It's also honoring the other person. It gives that person a chance for their self-care, where they say, no, it's not a good time. who are really not ready to hear it. You know, these are just little things that are respectful. They're not mean or big masses of negotiation.
I used to be like, you could have the most brilliant idea, but if it was change of any kind, no, absolutely no. And I would be like adamant about it. And I used to beat myself up about it because I couldn't find a way to change that. It was just like, and finally, when I realized I didn't have to change 100%, I could change 5%. And then the 5 became 10 and 15. And now it's like, well, some days it's give me 5 minutes. Some days it's give me 24.
Mm-hmm.
And usually I can tell right away if it's going to be a 5 minute or a 24. And then you're brilliant. Mm-hmm. And I'll do that because that's a great idea. But I was so caught up in 100% being open to change. And I just needed to start.
The baby steps. Self-care, baby steps.
And it happened really quick. I mean, it was like within a month I went to 75%.
All right.
But as long as, but I, you know, when people want a response right away, I'm like, do you remember when I wouldn't listen to anything you used to say? Isn't this better? Isn't 5 minutes or 24 hours so much better than how it used to be? And then it's like, oh yeah, okay. They forget I used to smoke too. I'm like, after the mind.
Showing them the visible transitions. Yeah.
I need a picture for it.
As I'm hearing and thinking here, boundaries, particularly emotional boundaries, seem real slippery.
They're slippery,
And, you know, words like denial and going back to sleep, those kind of things come to my mind. Do you have techniques or ideas on how you work with keeping them fresh and open and visible?
Sure. One is I surround myself with like-minded people who are going to support me and willing to say, Janet, I see a red flag. The other is it's constant practice. So in the beginning, if you create these certain boundaries, you can have post-it notes around, crossing the toilet, fridge, at your desk. Repetition, right? So repetition value, which helps integrate and form new habits. And the other thing that I do as well is actually with the camera, because each time you take a picture of something that you value, like, here's my new boundary, I'm going to write it on a note, and I'm going to take a picture of it, you are actually supporting new neurons in the hippocampus. I got this from Chance. You're supporting new neurons in the hippocampus and creating new ones too. Those neurons in the hippocampus are actually helping you create a new habit or pattern, which is going to help you break an old one. Yes.
Well, a couple of other things. We have a tendency to keep score. Keeping score is very important. But when we're in a down place, or, you know, doing a lot of what we're told in our upbringing, we tend to keep score of the things we mess up. Oh, I forgot my keys. Oh, I forgot. I don't, you know. And we keep a real good running tally of the things we didn't do right. And it's not easy, but it's so rewarding to be able to say, look, I did that right. Mm-hmm. Oh, I said no. Oh, I did this. And also to train those wonderful people that you have around you so that they notice when you did something like, oh, said no, way to go, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So you start keeping score, which just reinforces any time you do something that you want to do.
Great. And that reminds me of the 100-point system. This is something that you might want to try too, and I can email it to you. It's basically a chart, and the left part of the chart are the values or the boundaries. For example, here's the new things that I'm doing. And by the end of the day, you've got to reach 100 points. And what you do with the values is first you give them points. Saying no is 50 points. Standing up every 24 minutes while I'm at the computer, 30 points. Okay. So I could just go on and on. So you give yourself points, and by the end of the day, you check off when you do them, and at the end of the day, you reach 100 or more, this or better. That's going to help you too.
Definitely. Behavior modification.
Yeah.
Right.
And you've got to stick with it, and if you fall off, what do we use when we fall off? Self-compassion. No beating yourself up. Just get back on again. Call your friend. Call me. Call anybody. I got off track. I'm getting back on track again. Okay. I have a client in the city with a form of cancer, a rare form of cancer, and she's not sleeping. And I said, well, in fact, I wanted to talk about sleep because when we sleep, we relax the muscles, fresh blood goes to the muscles, like the growth hormones are restored. Like there's all kinds of replenishment with the nutrients and hormones. So if someone has cancer and they're not sleeping well, their immune system, their functioning is not up to par to help them with the immune system, because when we sleep, we are building our immune system. So I have a sleeping program that I put her on, and she's gone off track like 5 times. But the thing is, like, she just has compassion for herself, and she knows, okay, I'm going to get back on. And then the next time she falls off track, she's still ahead of the game. She's still, like, she's still forming this new habit. And if she gets off again, it's a shorter time. You know, she'll get off track for 2 days instead of 5 days. And she keeps doing it. And so sometimes we just got to go slow. You know? Yeah, Chance.
One of the things that Steve Campbell recommends is... you have a tendency, you feel like you want to say, oh, what's wrong with me? And instead you say, next time I'll do this. Mm-hmm. And it's really a nice little journey for your frontal lobes to be planning the next time it happens. Next time I'll do that.
Yeah, learning from your mistakes, you mean?
Right. What was that?
Learning from mistakes, evaluating what you could have done or should have done.
Or will do.
And then saying, next time...
Next time I'll do it this way.
Yeah, and for me, I don't really live in the realm of mistakes. I don't really have that mindset. It doesn't work for me. It just doesn't work for me.
Yeah, she doesn't have any problems. She has projects.
Yeah, exactly. I don't use the word
problems. Oh, Michael, yeah. So sorry.
I'm a writer, and I have a way of making the world into my editor. I will just grab people and say, what do you think? What do you think? And I have some favorite editors, and one of my favorites is the head librarian downtown.
Okay.
At the library. And
Matt.
Matt, got you. Yeah. And when I go to his door, his glass door office, you know. And I've taught him this sign. It means I have no attention. I have no attention.
Attention. I remember your signs. Right. You were showing us some signs.
And so when I go and when I do, when I go to the door and he makes this sign, I go into somebody. It's like this incredible, because it's so clear, the boundary.
Yeah.
One of my key beliefs has to do with the relationship between solitude and community, that you can't have community without solitude. And you can't really have solitude without community. They inform each other.
Mm-hmm.
And they're always doing this dance with each other. So, the issue of boundaries is conversational.
Mm-hmm.
It has to do with the management of our conversational lives. And the sign means pause.
Mm-hmm.
conceptual brain and non-conceptual body, you know.
It's like, okay, I need to pause and get things connected.
Boundaries that really, really need serious attention. And these are issues that aren't getting the attention they need.
Yeah, and thank you for sharing that, the signals. That's such a great self-care tool.
It is about self-care, absolutely.
It's beautiful, you know? Mm-hmm. And it works better for some people than words. Thank you. And I finally remember you showing us some things at my group on Wednesday nights at Coffee Cafe. Thank you for that.
It's still going on?
No. Oh. It'll come back, but yeah, it needs some reforming. Yes.
Intimacy.
Into me, you see. What about it?
So, some people need it, and some people don't want it. They're mm-hmm. afraid of it. So if you're trying to connect with somebody,
okay, so if I'm wanting to connect with someone and they don't want to connect with me, mm-hmm. I don't force it, but I love intimacy, and so if there's someone I want to be close to and I sense they're being close to me, if it's important enough, I will make a communication. With the communication model, so it's from a place of I, it's not about them at all. So it would be something like, I got something I want to say, and I just want to clear something up, so that's my intention. Are you open, or are you available for 5 to 10 minutes? And they say yes, so that's the beginning. And then what I do is I use data and senses. Okay, and then I offer my story, because we can make up a story based on what we see, hear, feel, smell, touch, and so I could say, there's a new friend in my life, and I'm touchy feely, so I was touching her wrist the other day. We were listening to music, and she moved her wrist away, but. Not like, but she moved it away, and I noticed, and I didn't say anything to her. She actually said something to me, but that would be an example where I would say, oh, okay, I touched your wrist the other day. I was showing you some affection, and I noticed, nothing about the person. I noticed that, or I saw your hand move away as soon as I touched your wrist. And I think that maybe you got offended. So that's my story, right? I think maybe you got offended. And then I usually express a feeling. And so I feel confused. I feel a little sad. And then I would say, is there something you would like? You know, is that something that you would prefer me not to do? And then the conversation could go from there. So
making an inquiry.
It's an inquiry, yeah, and I have that on my list of self-care inquiry. So it's really making a communication from a place of I. It's not about the other person. It's all my stuff. It's what I see or feel or smell or touch or taste. And then it's the story, or what I think, you know. And then it's usually accompanied with a feeling. But you don't want to go, that makes me, and because, and because, and because. Because that doesn't work. It's just, they're all separate. Everything is separate. The intention, the senses, the feeling, the story is all separate. Because when you mix it all up, because, and you make me feel this way, blah, 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 blah. That doesn't work. You know, it's just this place of ownership. And I learned this when I studied for 2 years back with my mentors. And I'm going to give you a personal example. It's in my book, too. Okay. So my brother Frank, he's like a year or so younger than I, and he became a born-again Christian, like 1999 or something, he and his wife. So there's a lot of distance that was created with the family. So I moved here in 2001, and I'm really good at communicating and keeping in touch with people, so I made such a great effort to stay connected with my family, and my brother was not returning my calls, he wasn't returning my emails, we didn't do text back then. So I made up a story that I meant nothing to him. That was my story. Like, he doesn't give a crap about me. And I felt sad, so I thought, okay, I'm the leader in all my relationships. I'm going to make a communication with him and see what happens, you know? So before I made the communication, I made sure that I had backup, like that I had a suggestion as to how we could connect again or be closer, because my intention was to be closer to him. So I didn't want to go into that whole communication and not have something to back it up with, like a suggestion or an inquiry. So I called him up and I asked if he was available to talk, and he said yes. And so I told him my intention was that I would like to get reconnected with him and be a little closer. And sometimes it's good to say, I would appreciate if you would just listen to everything I need to say until the end, and then you can say. So I told him I wanted to reconnect and be a little closer, and then I gave him the data. I've emailed you, I've called you, and my emails and phone calls have not been returned. So you notice it's not you. It's just sent you emails and phone calls, and they haven't been returned. And then I said, I really feel like you don't give a crap about me and my life, and I feel really sad. And then I'm wondering if that's true, and if you would like to be closer. So that was my communication. And he said, thank you for the communication. And then he said, I'm not interested. Okay, so this is reality. So you can make these communications, right? But don't, like, do them without an expectation. The whole thing is about being respectful, coming from a place of ownership, and leading the relationship as best as you can. So he said, I'm not interested. And I was like, okay. So 3 days later, I get a nine-page like document from him, and it was a description of his view from a father, and his view as a father, and his view as a man about the Four Agreements, the book, The Four Agreements. So after all, it worked, but the idea is like.
You started communicating?
Yeah, he sent me that 9-page document. Like, that was his way of being intimate with me, of connecting with me.
And did it explain why he hadn't talked to you all those years?
Well, it wasn't that he didn't talk to me all those years. It's just that, like, there was a phase where he wasn't returning phone calls or emails. And I don't know. And honestly, it doesn't really matter unless it's getting to the root of something. But this whole idea of, like, why is kind of the booby prize.
Kind of a what?
The booby prize. Like, it keeps us kind of being in the past and sort of stuck where we are. So the whole thing is, like, I made the communication. He said he wasn't interested. He clearly, you know, imaginated and slept on it and maybe prayed on it, and then decided, heck, my God, this is my sister. And so he just shared with me something very intimate. And and then we went from there. And then we went through cycles, you know, we went through cycles where we weren't so connected again. And No, I just, I've learned that, like, going back to all that stuff, like, digging things up is really unproductive. Unless there's, like, a specific root, you know.
You've got to learn from something. You know, if you made a mistake or said something.
Well,
if it's misunderstood, then you have to know how to rephrase things in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I opened that up to him in my communication. You know, I said, you know, I haven't heard from you, and so is there something going on, you know? And he said no. And even if there was, maybe he wasn't ready to say it then. But eventually, if there's something there at the root, it's going to keep revealing itself. It's going to keep, you know. Sometimes going into the semantics is not workable. And it really comes down to the result.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, it sounds to me like you were willing to accept his statement that he just wasn't interested.
Yeah.
Take him at his word. And I'm imagining that he probably had some feeling about feeling, you know, hearing that from him.
Oh, sure.
And you had to have a process to allow yourself to go through that.
Yes.
And sometimes my experience is when I'm focused on why, it's kind of distracting me from, wow, this is really painful. And if I can just really allow myself to grieve.
Right.
Because, like, I have a brother who doesn't, he doesn't want me to suffer. And it was painful for a long time. Mm-hmm. And at a certain point, I realized, oh, you know what? Really like him anyway. Like, maybe it's okay. Mm-hmm. Like, we love each other, but we don't have to be close. Like, it's okay. And
yeah.
Then, you know, on the other side, but it took a long time to get there.
It's a grieving.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a great example of not sticking on the why. It's like, well, first I need to process that my brother just said he didn't want to connect with me, and it's so important to me, and so then there's that process.
But by you accepting the no, you could have given him more room to then relax and then have that be
exactly.
Because if he feels like you're going to judge him, but not,
and I didn't
accept that, right? So
yeah.
I'm sure he could feel that, and that's such a relief.
Yeah,
you know,
there was no pressure.
Thinking about something else. Also, I remember when I was struggling with my brother's behavior towards me as a young person. I remember my parents explaining his behavior. And that was tremendously confusing to me. Because then I kept trying to, like, go, oh, that understanding should make me feel better. But the truth is, it didn't. It didn't. It never did. It was useless information, really. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate your story. I think it's very instructive and highlights, you know, to me, it highlights always, I'm always looking at things from the emotional standpoint, like,
mm-hmm.
what are we going to do with the feelings that come up? Because ultimately, it comes back to our self-responsibility.
Yeah.
There's a whole, we may have all kinds of skills for communicating, but what do we do with those feelings?
And they're my feelings, they're not,
well,
didn't cause the feelings.
Right.
It's recognizing, I think, that the emotion is there to give us information.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as we get the information, it gives us something we can do with it. But when it gets really big and takes our breath away, it takes us out of the ability to move forward
mm-hmm.
and have something go
mm-hmm.
differently than it has before.
Mm, precisely.
And so as soon as you allow the different to happen, who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah.
And we're in that, what I call the repatterning, the allowing.
Yeah, and that's a form of self-care that's super, super important, is the allowing.
Mm-hmm.
We have these emotions, and they're part of us. They're not bad or good. They're just emotions. Let them run through. Be as constructive as you can while they're running through, you know. But stuffing them, speaking of depression, you know, stuffing them is a cause of depression.
You take the E out of the emotion, you have motion.
Yeah, you take the E out of the emotion, you have motion. That's awesome.
But if you're dealing with somebody that can't express their feelings, or they don't know, like your brother just said, or your brother said no, you don't really know whether you said something that insulted him or you did something that he didn't like. You don't know what his values are. You don't know why he's saying.
it's about her experience. It isn't really about him. All she had to do was express to him her feeling and her need, and then when he set his boundary, which is I don't care, then she had to just deal with her feeling. It's right. not
See,
about
that,
making.
That would kill me. I mean,
yeah, I know. I get
to
it.
Know, you know why?
This is okay. I'm so glad you're talking about this, because this is like, oh, this is just the knot. This is like the knot in your solar plexus and your heart. It just
keeps
you. If I can
understand you. It, I can let it go. He doesn't have to like me, but I have to understand why so I can let it go. Because I might
that,
want to change my behavior, or I might not.
That holds you back.
Mm-hmm. What, wanting to understand holds me back?
Yeah.
Well, isn't it part of compassion? Is trying to understand people?
You can just be compassionate for how the person is being and where they're at without understanding them whatsoever. And that's going to give you so much peace. It's going to bring you so much peace. I was in your situation. I had the same approach and attitude, and it caused me so much grief. And then finally, I just let go of that why and trying to understand. I'm a very curious person, and you are too. And my curiosity gets me, and then I just let it go. I cannot tell you the peace that it brought to me. Absolute peace. And I gave him an opportunity to say if there was something there, and he didn't use it. And then in our future conversations, we have had the chance to say things. If you walk away tonight and you choose to really like work on letting that go, because you can be compassionate without understanding, your whole life's going to change. I promise you. Hold on one second. Yes, Karen.
I'm just thinking, like, you can't drive that automobile forward if you're looking behind you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just not safe to do.
Yeah.
You have to just stop looking.
Stop looking back.
So cool, if you think about it, here's this great big windshield, and you have this little tiny mirror looking back. These mirrors over here. Where do you want to look?
Plus, it's not really a realistic picture in that small space,
no.
Is it, either?
Yeah.
But if that person doesn't know what's blocking them,
there's nothing that you can do about it.
It's not your journey.
I can imagine sometimes. I think I have a pretty good imagination. And I can give people their space.
Just give them their space and just give them lots of compassion.
But it makes a difference about the relationship with somebody that is really close to you, married to your son.
Yeah, it's painful. I totally get it.
I think another key piece is to recognize there really is an innate difference between the noun and the adjective. There's compassion and there's compassionate.
Yeah.
There's empathy and there's empathic.
Yeah.
So that one is being in it, and the other one is the willingness to be there. And when we're in the state of willingness to be empathetic or willingness to be compassionate, that's a whole lot different than being caught up in the role that the noun gives us.
Yes. Yeah,
as soon as we go to that description, we open up the possibilities.
Very good. Yeah,
such a great description.
Mm-hmm. How can I describe that? So,
yes, Michael.
How about if you said, I'm so glad you're so clear about what you feel?
Yeah. I had a handout for one of my seminars today, and I was handing it out, saying, if you want to take an extra one to give to somebody else. And so this woman gets up, and she's about to leave, and I said, did you want the handout? And she said, no. And I said, thank you so much. That's very clear. I appreciate that. That's a good feeling.
Yeah.
We're in a learning paradigm where we overvalue answers, we're judged by our answers, and we undervalue questions.
Right.
And I am always relieved just to know what is the question that is going on inside of me, and to ask it, and then not to answer it, but to celebrate the just celebrating the question. And like, if when you let the person say, hey, I don't like you, and you say, oh, like, glad you're clear about what will make them like you more.
Because you're not being defensive.
Right.
You're acknowledging them.
And we have a certain set of expectations about if I tell this person I don't like them, then they're going to respond. And if they respond in the way that you expect, you're going to stay in that paradigm, in that story, which builds oppositions and nourishes that. What do you call it? Polarity.
Polarity.
Yeah. Nourishes that whole.
Duality.
That's
yeah.
Yeah. That's
having. I teach non-dualities. Lowering that resistance and the attachments.
Denise, thank you so much.
Thank you.
What a wonderful dialogue you've generated.
Yeah, I love having dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for being here. Thank you so much. I'll see you soon.
Okay.
Thanks, Maxine. Yeah, so it's actually 9:15. So I wanted to close with a few things. One question I want to ask you, and you can answer it out loud or just take it home, is are you ready to be of service in a deeper way? And if you are, that requires self-care, and maybe requires more self-care than you have positions in your life right now. I believe we're all here with our own unique gift. We have a unique gift to give, to offer to others, to each other, and you can do that by being good to yourself first. It really is a selfless act of love. And there are so many ways. I mean, we had a rich dialogue tonight with so many different pieces of self-care, and there's still so much more to talk about. And so I want to thank you for being here. I want to offer you a few things. One, congratulating you on showing up and taking care of yourself tonight by getting in the self-care dialogue. And so... I have a free PDF. It's a resource, and it's downloadable, and it's 3 keys to more ease and joy in life transitions. A lot of you are in transition. You will be again. So if you sign up on my email list, you can get that resource for free. If you buy a book tonight, I'm offering a free consultation on the phone. So if you want to continue the dialogue, or you have more questions, you want more clarity, you can sign up on my list and we'll have a nice phone call. I'm also offering a 90-minute session in person for 50% off. So it's $150 value, and I'm offering it for $75. It's 90 minutes. It'll be rich inquiry, conversation. And then I'm also offering 4 sessions. It's usually $699, and I'm offering that for 40% off, which is $420 for 90-minute sessions. So I want to gift you with those juicy gifts and free things. And can I answer any questions, any lingering questions you have before we go?
How much is the book?
The book is $20.
Okay.
$19.99, right?
Yeah.
$20, yeah.
Okay.
And I will autograph it for you or to whomever you'd like if you'd like the book. And then you can sign up for your 20-minute consultation. I think that's it. Oh, I have a calendar of events that you can look at, and you can find it on my website. And I want to mention, now where's the flyer? I had the Brain Fair flyer. Okay. Well, I'll just... Okay. On August 17th, Chance is holding this successful Brain Fair in October, and I'm part of it, and we've been having these little, small, reviews to show people how nutrition affects the brain, how certain, you know, taking photos helps you learn, et cetera, et cetera. So we're having a preview on August 17th at the Healdsburg Senior Center, and that's on my website, and we have a flyer. And then on the 18th in Sebastopol at Miss Daisy's Wonderland, Dr. Daniel and I are teaching a class for joyful menopause. But you don't have to be a woman, and you don't have to be in or coming upon menopause. But it is, it's an introduction to how to get your adrenal glands set up for menopause, or just set them up for stress. Particularly with menopause, they offer estrogen when the ovaries don't. And if your adrenals aren't working, then that's why you're miserable in menopause, because a lot of times it's because your adrenal glands are not working. So this one is October 10th.
Right.
The brain fair, okay.
Oh, you wanted that.
I was going to show them give them the preview one, but...
Okay.
So,
I think I gave them all to you.
So, thank you for being
thank
here.
You.
Really enjoyed the conversation. That was really nice. Thank you. So.